Let's get into the group. I think most people in this Zoom call have been waiting for Croatia, Czech Republic, England, and Scotland the Brave.
Can we skip this group, please? How long have we got?
Lockie, let's start with you. Your fit bar boys.
What? No Ryan Gould.
Well, I just want to start off by saying that the phrase "I've waited my whole life for this" is thrown around far too often in the common parlance. But being only 21 years of age, born in 2000, I can say with technical legitimacy that I have literally waited my whole life for this moment, for Scotland to appear at a major tournament. And it may well all go to hell in a handbasket. But hey, I'll be here to enjoy the ride, whatever the outcome. Four to the boys.
Drink it in, man.
What does Scotland have to offer for the neutral observer?
They have got a very interesting package in terms of the way they set up. They have, after quite a long time of figuring it out, they have sort of fallen onto a, with a little bit of thanks to Mikel Arteta, a method to fit their two best players who play the same position into a side, which involves playing, please don't laugh, Kieran Tierney at centre-back on the left side of a three, and then Andy Robertson at wide left wing back. So a lot of the play comes down that left hand side, and it is exciting to watch because, you know, as weird as it sounds to have Tierney play in that spot, he does have experience there with Celtic, with Arsenal this season, and honestly has done a pretty good job in that role despite his size and stature. So Robertson is the main attacking outlet from that left hand side, but you'll see Tierney also overlapping and underlapping and moving out where you know, where the chances arise. The other interesting or cool thing is that Lyndon Dykes, former Australian Lyndon Dykes, is probably going to be playing up front, whether that's with a small wide forward or with Che Adams. It will probably depend. It may be a mixture of both throughout the group stage, but he's been actually pretty darn impressive as a line leading player for Scotland, and I'm obviously, given my sort of dual heritage, very excited to see him line up there.
My big question with Scotland was, what does Lyndon Dykes need to do for the Australian media to have collective amnesia and start to say that it was a massive mistake not to have capped him? Because at the time that Scotland called him up, I think there was a very strong good for you sentiment and a rather widespread collective belief that this was a League One, maybe a championship-level player. And now I see the English media suggesting that if he plays well for Scotland, QPR could cash in on him and send him to the Premier League, which really does show how rapid his rise has been, if not in a footballing sense, in a perception sense.
Sorry, what's that, Teo? Suspect ball knowledge in the Australian football media?
Honestly, like, I think it's one of those ones that may well get... Like, it might look good after this tournament. It could well get worse with age when you consider the striking options that Australia have available. It could degrade with time.
Ryan Gould, though, is a big one for Scotland.
It is, and I think...
Like, creatively. But look, they're going to react for the most part. And so Dykes is very compatible in that respect. Speaking of a line leading forward who's going to stretch the defensive line in transition, like he's compatible in that respect, and they can react, like, you know, as most recently evidenced against the Netherlands, if you do have a team that's kind of dysfunctional in possession. And
so
if they stay in
what you're saying
ball,
is upset against England then? don't rule it out.
Look, I'm not
my
ruling it out.
My personal preference would be for Steve Clark to bench the defector and play the man with the largest thighs in the Western Hemisphere, Che Adams.
They have experimented with playing both up front recently. I don't think it'll happen every game. I think Steve Clark prefers to play a smaller kind of wide forward at a club level as a second striker, like a Forrest or a Ryan Fraser type. But you'll notice in my previous answer, I mentioned the majority of the mentions with respect to specific players were Robertson and Tierney, and that probably is the drawback of this side. That it's a little bit too reliant on particularly Robertson to create attacking opportunities, and if it's not him, it's John McGinn if they're playing.
Big John McGinn.
If they're playing with a three-man midfield with two up front, which is most likely what they'll be doing, it's a little bit too reliant on those three players to make things happen. And Scotland do a lot of hit and hoping, so they will probably score some banging goals from outside the area, which I think is a big reason why Che Adams is included.
You know what? Because McTominay can hit a ball too.
Yeah, they Scotland have scored a lot of goals from range, from a larger focal point striker laying it off to smaller runners around him. I mean, the goal that they scored against Serbia was not that exact play.
Speaking of reacting against dysfunctional teams. That's why they qualified.
So,
and that's what I remember your let's say your lack of belief before the Serbia qualifier. And I remember saying like, no, they'll get past Serbia because they can react. They are a solid team, and they're one of those, let's say, in that bracket of European teams that can react and stay in front of the ball. If they are given that opportunity to be the reactive team. Personally, I don't think, like, let's say, Czech Republic's probably the worst team in the group. But
Czech Republic might be the worst team at the tournament. Reacting. They're horrible.
Hey, they got Thomas Tuchel.
I think West Ham fans would have... I think West Ham fans would have something to say to you about that, Josh. And maybe Patrick Schick fans as well.
Oh, Patrick Schick.
psycho dribbler, Patrick Schick.
Would you like to rescind your comment?
I think we've got to close off Fit Bar Corner there and open up a can of worms that is England. Tao, I'll turn to you as our resident normie so far with your picks. Is it coming home?
I feel as though Joey Lynch has left us high and dry here without some real chest-thumping England sort of parochialness. Look,
Bang's table.
I suspect that England, carrying the weight of expectation of being favourites, being also the moral arbiters of this tournament, means they've taken on a lot of responsibility here. I think that England will be fine. They'll get out of this group. They'll beat the Czechs. Croatia will be a different story. I think they will be too strong for Scotland. So I'm giving them 6 points straight away, and I'm putting them in the knockout rounds. But I think that some of the questions that they've had about the solidity of their defence, about the ability to retain possession and dominate games in midfield, I suspect that if England start winning, people will start criticising the aesthetics. Nothing's ever good enough. And one of my great underrated sort of storylines of the tournament will be, at what point will people get jealous of the atmosphere in Hungary and the English self-flagellating media that they are start agitating for the final to be moved to the Puskas Arena because England in some way will be cheapened by winning at home or don't deserve it. I imagine that's going to be a big story that might play out at some point as well.
Look, I think this opening game between England and Croatia is one of the most important in the tournament. Because whoever wins this game and wins the group will have significantly reduced travel time at a tournament like this. And even in normal circumstances, that's huge. Because in the Euro, you've never really had a USA 94 scenario. I remember us talking about it during the Mundial Memories show, like how important travel became as the tournament went on. And, you know, let's say whoever wins this group has an itinerary of London, Rome, London. If they finish second in the group, you go from London to St. Petersburg to Copenhagen back to London. Like, so you're going from one end of Europe to another, playing games, over, you're having to back up. So this opening game is critical. And like, personally, I think if Croatia wins the group, they can win the tournament. If not, then I think it'll be too much. And the big thing for England is who plays in the number 10 position, because it will be absolutely critical who plays alongside with, not alongside, but who plays in conjunction with Harry Kane. I'm not necessarily certain that Phil Foden is the most compatible solution in that respect. I think Mason Mount is, because, playing him as a midfielder at Chelsea didn't work. He becomes too much of a circulator. And he's one who's going to really break the line and, try running behind from deep. Mason Mount's probably the most compatible to Harry Kane, because Harry Kane's going to drop 15-20 meters from his starting position, and try to incorporate the rest, because the midfield sucks otherwise. Like, you know, you play a double pivot of Rice and Bellingham, that's going to suck. You play, you know, a Jordan Henderson who's fighting fitness when his primary and probably only attribute is his physical capacity and aerobic capacity. But yeah, look, the two strongest teams in this group have a lot of questions that need to be answered as the tournament goes on, and that will determine their legitimacy as candidates as this tournament.
I heard the screams from Merseyside when you said that about Jordan Henderson, Ante, but people don't like hearing the truth. That's the thing about Jordan Henderson, yeah.
He is arse, man. He's arse.
Many unhappy Liverpool fans in Ante's mentions.
But it's tradition for England to bring a half-fit player and pin their hopes on them.
Yeah.
But like, even and they're going to talk about, oh, you know, he was great at Liverpool, this, that. Liverpool have been so great, da-da-da. But Liverpool's midfield almost has no attacking responsibility outside of circulating the ball out to the fullbacks or passing the ball into Firmino, who, you know, pretty much is everything for them from in terms of a reference point. The only responsibility Wijnaldum has, for example, is spamming runs behind the defensive run from deep, and people say he has tactical intelligence. No. And, like, that's why who plays as a 10 is absolutely critical for England. Grealish playing against Austria was nothing short of anonymous.
So you're saying that you want a sort of second striker, kind of Mason Mount making runs beyond, and then the creativity to come from the flanks? Is that how you think it would work best?
The creativity will effectively come from Harry Kane, sure, like it did at 2018, because he's the one who's really providing England with positional superiority. They are going to be quick in transition. That's
part of the course,
of no doubt. Whoever plays there, whoever plays on the wings. I'm intrigued to see, however, who starts out of Grealish and Foden and Mount and where, I think. And even and if Saka starts as well, I'm really intrigued to see where he starts, because against Austria, I know Twitter was ablaze with tweets about Saka, but I like him, but I don't necessarily think he's transformative in an England team like this that has a lot of questions with respect.
Surely they have to get Jadon Sancho in the starting lineup.
He's great.
He's Europe.
But I think that's the thing. I think that's kind of the thing, though, with England. Like, we're all saying X player should start. Like, there's no doubt that England have got the individual quality to make a deep run this team. The question is not, I don't think, about the individual players. For me, the question is whether or not Gareth Southgate selects them in the right composition and in the right order. And from post-2018, I don't see many suggestions, or much evidence rather, to suggest that he will do that. Maybe he's seen the light and will do something different this tournament. If they do, England could well win, but I don't think he will.
He's already made one big error. He's already made one huge error in his selection sort of stuff too, as well. You know, he didn't bring in, I think he should have selected James Ward-Prowse for this final squad, because he needed an extra midfield. They need more players in there. And secondly, he didn't pick one of the most form English centre-backs in the world right now. And I'm not saying this just out of Milan bias. But Fikayo Tomori had the season, second half of the season of his life.
Even Smalling.
The thing is, it's he goes with the same players, you know, all the time. And people were joking about on Twitter saying Gareth Southgate needs to get a subscription to Serie A. Well, I mean, did he not see how Chris Smalling's played for the last season and a half? Has he not seen how Fikayo Tomori's last 6 months were? Fikayo Tomori is one of the quickest centre-backs as well in the world. And when you've got that big old Harry Maguire, you need someone fast alongside him. Especially when they're playing Croatia, who's going to put Ante Rebic up top and he's going to just run. You know, you need someone who can keep up with him.
The thing about Ward-Prowse, it's going to come to a point where England will play chaos ball with Calvert-Lewin up top. And you need someone who can... Ward-Prowse is really good dead ball. But and that's also the case with Alexander Arnold. But there's a, like I said, there's a lot of questions that this English team has to answer, and we haven't even gotten to Croatia.
Well, there's one other major potential schism with England, and that's between the very diverse squad and the gammon fans that will boo the knee for the entire tournament. Damir, did you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and I don't say that in a positive manner. I think, you know, that you've already alluded to the potential negativity of, you know, if results or playing style don't go England's way in the first few games, well, you're going to have a lot of media pressure on Southgate to play X, Y, and Z instead of, you know, A, B, and C. And, it's going to be interesting to see just, you know, with the whole booing controversy, you know, whether that affects the players on the pitch, because, you know, I can imagine that it would, you know. Understandably, they're only human, and to, you know, see, you know, hear something as disappointing as that will definitely have an effect on a lot of the squad, you'd imagine. But I just wanted to sort of counter something that Ante said, because I think it's important. You know, yes, whoever finishes top of this group is going to have reduced travel times going into the knockout stages, because they'll be, you know, as you've alluded to, London, Rome, London. But at the same time, whoever finishes top in this group plays the second placed team from Group F, which is either going to be France, Portugal, or Germany.
No problem.
And when you look at recent tournaments, I mean, you look at, for example, in Euro 2016, Portugal finished third in their group, and their path to the final is Croatia, Poland, Wales, whereas Italy finished first in their group, and their path to the final is Spain, Germany, and had they progressed against Germany, it's France. You look at England in the 2018 World Cup, they finished second in their group, and they play, and they have a much easier draw than Belgium do on the way to the semi-finals. So I think, you know, the question that I have with this group is it tactically convenient to actually finish second place? Because I think where England and Croatia both are at the moment, particularly England, they're coming to the tournament somewhat underprepared, because they have had a lot of players who were involved in the Champions League final. They've joined up the squad late. When it comes to Croatia, I think, you know, you have a strong midfield, but when you look at they've got question marks up front. They haven't properly replaced Mandzukic, and also Lovren is a doubt injury-wise defensively, although I do rate Chaleta Chad. So
Chalet Tatar starts regardless of whether Lovren is.
Yeah, I think he's the best defender. Yeah,
you know, it's one of Lovren or Vida who plays alongside Chalet Tatar, who's probably our best defender.
I love Vida, and man. He's like an extra from Vikings.
Vida's one of the, like, let's say, a spiritual leader within that team.
He's definitely my spiritual leader.
I think there are details that Croatia has to figure out. One, how to best maximize or how to best alleviate what Kovacic does and doesn't do, and, you know, how to integrate Vlahovic in context of that. If Rebic starts up top instead of Kramaric or Petkovic, because Dalic wants presses. This is why he started that Rebic alongside Mandzukic and Perisic to begin with, in, you know, going into 2018. If Rebic starts up top, you have to play Vlahovic. One, Vlahovic has to start. Two, Vlahovic has to start on the left on Kovacic's side, because I don't want to see, like, as a Croatian fan, I don't want to see a similar situation to England, or sorry, not to England, to Italy, where players filter too much to one side, because you can have Vlahovic and Modric acting as reference points on opposite sides of the pitch. And I think that is very important. If you do have Kovacic and Perisic on one side, play will completely break down, you know, regardless of whether you play Gvardiol or Barisic as a left back, because the ball will circulate out to them, and, you know, you'll have a minimized scope of options to penetrate. And look, ideally, I'd go with Vlahovic, Brozovic, Modric midfield, because you'll open up any team in the world, regardless who plays in the front three. But that won't happen. because, you know, Dalic wants a defensive solidity in that respect, not necessarily with relation to the relationship between defense and attack. Because if Croatia, like, they're weak in transition, but they're weak in transition because they haven't been able to turn the defense towards their own goal. And I think that was the one thing, you know, in certain games where they played Modric, Vlasic, and Brozovic, who's arguably the best defensive midfielder in the world, ahead of Kante and Casemiro, they will be more defensively solid because they're turning they're scrambling the opposition defensively, and as a consequence, they won't be enabled to quickly spring into transition.
What about this this talk of this rift between Dalic and Kramaric about not playing him in his position?
Kramaric is a tricky one because he doesn't really play as a nine for Hoffenheim either. They played, you know, the likes of Bebu as that point up front, and Kramaric plays off him. And Kramaric's movement is exceptional for, like, especially in a league like the Bundesliga, which is like just schnell transition. Kramaric is different, but Hoffenheim is specifically designed to maximize Kramaric. And if you already have Modric and Vlasic, you don't really need like a mover. There's someone who can really warp teams defensively off the ball because you already have that. But if you do play Kovacic on that left side, look, I think Kramaric can work, but then the wider positions become critical. I don't necessarily think Rebic should be a starter if that's the case, unless he plays up front. But look, if you get the midfield right, a lot of problems that Croatia, or potential problems that Croatia could face, will be less of a problem.
I think it's prediction time. Lockie, give me a four.
Croatia top the group. England finish in second and potentially set themselves up with a pretty difficult round of 16 game against Poland that I could well see them losing. Scotland, for no other reason than decent past results against the Czech Republic, finished third and hopefully qualify with the aid of an upset draw against England is what I'm crossing my fingers for. I'll have them in third and Czech Republic are last.
Nick?
I'm going England just over Croatia on goal difference. I think it'll be a draw in that first game, to be honest. Croatia second. Scotland go through in third as one of those teams, and the Czech Republic go out without really a whimper. They're just everyone's whiffing boys in. Everyone smashes them. Like, it's going to be brutal.
Taya?
Scotland beat them 1-0.
I have this is a 9-6-3-0 England, Croatia, Scotland, Czechs, and I have Scotland as one of the unlucky teams that does not get through as a best third place team.
Croatia.
Who
Croatia,
this man? England,
Croatia, England, Scotland, but Scotland finish on 2 points.
Damia?
Again, another group with two home teams in England, Scotland. I'm going to go for... It's a tough one because what Nick said, I think the England-Croatia game opener will be a draw, and then it's really a question of how England responds against Scotland in that second group game. I'm also not at, like, while I think the Czechs will finish last, I think they'll be competitive because I don't think that they're an awful side, and I don't think that there's, you know, much difference between the Czechs and the Scots, and, you know, on their day they can, you know, give someone like an England a test. So I'm going to go for England on top just, Croatia second, and it's, you know, I believe Scotland should have enough to qualify as one of the best third place teams, particularly given that they'll be playing on home soil for two out of the three games.
I'm going to say Croatia top, England draw two, nice, and win against the Czechs, and Scotland in third, missing out by failing to beat the Czech Republic in their first game.
Honestly, that is not the most unrealistic turn of events for Scotland.
I'm going to say Scotland finish on a creditable 2 points.
If we get a draw against England but go out as a third place team, I will be taking that all the way back.
All
to
I can think no of is Mike Bassett and the commentary. They did it in 74. They did it in 78. Scotland are out of the group stages.
You know what? Like, speaking of Mike Bassett, that is the one thing that I have been, like, that has lingered in the back of my head with respect to this opening game and talking about this England golden generation. Like, we're England! Like,
three cheese for Modric.
It's divine right syndrome.
That midfield, I'm praying for a Vlahovic monster class, specifically as a PL flop.
So it's
like,
it's good.
PL flop. Or Kramaric to score. Like, I need this more than anything in my life. Like, I would take this more than Croatia actually winning the Euro.
Does Vlahovic win himself a move to Barcelona to play for Koeman again?
Koeman rated him. That wasn't the problem. It was Big Sam who beat him.
I was going to ask, is Gareth Southgate's post-game talk to the England players going to be free cheese for Vlahovic following the conclusion of the first game?
You know how good it would be if Croatia wins and I get the extra day off because it's Queen's birthday? Like, this would be fantastic.
Ante's going to be on his longboard, you know, drinking, what was it, pomegranate juice and...
Look, the first game is critical in this group. The first game is absolutely critical because, you know what, like...
What will you be listening like to, said, Ante? It won't be Fleetwood Mac.
I'll be in a pad, so... I look at England and...
You strike me as a man who's thought about this group way too much.
I have thought about this group a lot. But, yeah, we can win it. And if we win the group, we can win the tournament.